Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Lieboff. And Mike, things have gone from bad to worse, and they could still get even worse. Go figure. It seems like every day it gets worse and worse. Yeah, the Islanders lost two more games, but we've got seven guys on the COVID list right now. Another big injury on top of Ryan Pulock's injury. Just, I don't know, man. I'm not bailing on the season. This will be, I think, a recurring theme throughout this episode. But boy, it certainly seems like right now this team is just straight up cursed. I don't know how else you could put it, really.
Yeah, I'm a boxing fan. And there's a lot of times in fights where you're watching the fight and it's very clear that you're like looking to the corner. You're like, you guys need to do your fighter a favor and throw in the towel. It happened this weekend with Sean Porter fighting Terrence Crawford. Sean Porter's dad was actually his corner man and threw in the towel. And you're just like, you're watching a fighter and they're just giving everything they got. And they're just not able to, for whether it's a skill thing or whatever it is, just not their night. They just aren't able to get themselves in the fight. And you're just begging for the corner to stop the pain. And I don't think we're there yet, but like you said, but like, it's, you know, there's so many things to kind of remind yourself of how early it is in the season. 66 games left. It's a lot of games. And that, you know, there are some teams, I think, in the Islanders universe that are punching above their weight and should fall back down. And like, there's, at some point, this thing is going to turn. It might be too late, but it's even just getting through this and salvaging the next 4 months being meaningful, you know, hockey is kind of a win for me at this point. Like, that's what I want to get to, because there's really nothing worse than having a season end in, you know, mid-December. And we're no strangers to that, obviously. We've lived through that for most of our lives. I remember when Kyle Okposo and Mark Streit got hurt. Yeah. In the preseason.
We've talked about that a lot in this podcast.
Yeah, that's something, as I said, it's a recurring theme on the show. And that's such a poignant moment for me, because I just remember that day thinking, yeah, this season's already over and they haven't even played a regular season game yet. And that's just, it's just a shitty feeling, because who knows what a whole, what can happen over a year and whatever. And, but we're, like you said, like, it's way too early to bail, but the Islanders are also far from fine. Like, there's a lot of things that have just gone wrong that are not their fault. And there's some things that have gone wrong that are their fault. And the timing of it all just couldn't be worse. That's the crazy thing, that this whole, outbreak plus the injuries to their two most durable players and two of the most durable players in the NHL. It just couldn't be, the timing couldn't be worse, with not just the arena opening, but then this fact that the schedule, after playing 13 games over the course of 35 days or so, against basically non-conference competition, now they're looking at the most important stretch of the season with the Rangers, Pittsburgh, the Rangers, and I think Philadelphia coming up, where they'll be playing Thomas Hickey and company. The roster really feels like it's March 27th, like 2011. Like, that's how this roster kind of reads, right, with half the team as being AHL guys and the other half being veterans. It's one of those moments where it's like a gut check as a fan, and one of those times where you're kind of wondering why you even do it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, my brain didn't even go to sort of an end of the season roster. It went to a preseason roster. Like, the rosters they basically played on Saturday versus the Flames and then Sunday versus the Leafs were essentially preseason rosters. Like, it was a couple of veterans sprinkled in with a bunch of AHL guys, you know, some guy probably most people never heard of, and Grant Hutton. All was missing was like a goalie on a PTO, basically, that you would never hear from again after that game was over. And it's pretty bad. Before we get to the games, I am glad you brought up, I don't know, Murphy's Law aspect of this whole thing, which is, yes, obviously the Islanders are in a very bad spot. Some of it is of their making, and a lot of it, quite frankly, isn't. And our friend Carey Haber, who we had on last week, was talking about, you know, there's there's excuses and then there's reality. And in this case, saying that your team is hamstrung because seven guys are on the COVID list is not an excuse. Like, that's just unfortunate. It's just like, it kind of happened. This, we've seen two teams. The Islanders are now the third team in the NHL for this to have happened to. The Sharks had an outbreak really right almost as right as the season started, and then it was kind of over with. They had a bunch of teams, and then the Senators, they had a bunch of guys. They had about a dozen guys put on, and including assistant coach Jack Capuano and I think some other staff members, and they got, I think, three games postponed. So the Islanders haven't had any games postponed yet. And I say yet because at his availability today, Lou Lamoriello was talking, and you know, that comes from the league. And it's funny to me when Lou, who we all recognize as kind of like, you know, a guy who pulls strings, whether you realize it or not, you know, when he defers to the league, you're always kind of like, is it really up to the league, Lou? Could you maybe you know, make a phone call to the commissioner or something like that? But as far as he says, it's up to the league on whether or not they're going to postpone them. So, you know, as of right now, the games aren't postponed for Wednesday against the Rangers and then Friday against the Penguins. But by the time you listen to this, that may change. And the fact of the matter is that having Josh Bailey on the COVID list from before the, you know, just at the end of the road trip was be kind of a problem, but then to add Anders Lee, Adam Pellick, Andy Green, Ross Johnston, you know, even a guy like Johnston, okay, fine, he's a part-timer, but like, that's just one other guy. Since then, Anthony Beauvillier missed Saturday's game, turned out to be a false positive, but then they put Kiefer Bellows on. And again, Bellows is almost kind of in the same boat. Like, you know, is he a key cog that you were expecting to contribute? Maybe not, but it's just one other guy. And then this morning, it's Zdeno Chara, who, you know, gets back to sort of talking about the forced error, the errors that they're making themselves. Maybe, you know, I think we can all agree right now that giving Chara this much ice time has probably been a mistake. It hasn't helped when they were healthy. You know, he's kind of a shell of himself these days. It seems like every time he's on the ice, the Islanders get pinned in their own zone for a minute and a half. And, you know, other decisions that were made, you know, maybe kind of look towards maybe mistakes in the offseason. But then again, you look at other stuff that is out of their control. Kyle Palmieri, what is his shooting percentage now? Is it like 3%? I know the Islanders as a team are shooting under 7% right now. Like, what is – I meant to look up Palmieri's, you know, shooting.
Yeah. I think it's like around there, yeah. Or maybe two. I think it's funny. Like, you think Palmieri, Pagiot, Parisi have two goals combined. Right. And then you throw Bailey in there. Bailey's got – one goal himself. Bailey's shooting 12.5%, which is hilarious. Right. He's got one goal. He's almost near the team lead in shooting percentage with one goal.
Right.
There's a couple of outbreaks going on at the same time, right? Like, there's the COVID outbreak, and then there's also the just the snake bite outbreak. Everyone is snake bitten right now. And these things, it does seem to happen to one or two teams a season. That just everything kind of just goes off the rails in this kind of way. And there's so many reasons to not feel good, and they're all legitimate right now about the Islanders. And but at the same time, there is a way to look at it as and to kind of calm yourself down a little bit, which is, I think, Carrie retweeted it. It was from Usher Maddie, who was basically like, at this point, you just don't look at the standings. You look at it as a quest. The team is now has to figure out a way to get to like this 97, 98 point mark. And that starts, to your point, with Kyle Palmieri's, Zach Parise's, JG Pejo's, those guys finding the back of the net, or at least helping someone else find the back of the net. And there was one play, I think, that really summed up where the Islanders are right now. Was Anthony Beauvillier, who missed the Calgary game, then was brought back in on that false positive. So like, getting him back in the lineup, there was like, some good feelings all of a sudden. Everyone's like, all right, Bo's back. He's a huge part of this team. He's such a good player in transition. And what happens? He uses that transition, a pass from Parisi, I think, breakaway for Beauvillier. Yeah. It beats Joseph Woll. And the puck just rolls off his stick, and a minute later, game over, because the Leafs go up 2-0. Right. And to our point, it's like this isn't, maybe Beauvillier took his eye off the puck. I have no, nobody will know, but maybe the puck just rolled on him, and it just was a really unlucky break that ended up, not only was it every swing is like a two-goal swing, yeah. So, right? It's not only did it end up not in the back of the net for the Islanders, but it ends up in their own net. You can think about the Palmieri hitting the post against the Panthers, or is that the Lightning? Can't remember. Like, that's what seems to be happening. And these things, they do end. At some point, their luck should turn. Mm. They should end up getting, they've got two goaltenders who are very capable of stealing a game here or there. One of them,
One of them's not playing that well right now.
Yeah, exactly. One of them is not up to par, but we know he can get there. We know he's got that in his locker, and so you just hope. You got to look at it now. Like it's the Islanders now have. You hear it all the time when teams are in the hunt for a playoff spot in March 1st or something, like, oh, we're playing playoff hockey already. Mm. Well, the Islanders basically are in that spot now, right, on November 23rd. So, and that's how you got to look at it. If you really want to try to drown out the pessimism, and there's no, I'm not saying like you can be as, there's nothing wrong with being fatalistic right now, right? There's six game losing streak with no points on the board. The Islanders haven't won since what, November 2nd. You be as fatalistic as you want, but if you're trying to focus on, a way out, I think that's the best way to do it. I think that was a poignant point. Like, this team could still get to 98 points by playing 36, 27 hockey. I don't know, whatever, you can do the math, but like they got to win like 37 of their final 66 games and collect a lot of loser points. Mm-hmm. And you look at it that way, and you're like, it does kind of give you some perspective on just how long the season is. However, of course, the first chunk of those games will at least looks like they will come without a lot of players.
Yeah.
And the next wave of those games will come without Nelson and Paul.
Yeah, Lou was pretty clear that those dudes aren't coming back for the games this week. And yeah, and then just this morning also at the same time that he announced Chara being put on the COVID list, he announced that Brock Nelson is now out 2 to 4 weeks with a hip injury that he sustained in the game against the Leafs, which is also brutal news. So, the thing about Saturday's, I looked at that as the Islanders missing their top two defensemen is just a brutal, brutal hit. And like, Pulock being out was a problem as it is, but then you take Pelech out of the equation too. And now it's like their top defensive pair was Noah Dobson and Zdeno Chara, who like literally a week and a half ago, we had Arthur Staple on telling us about how that didn't work out as a pairing. And that's what necessitated breaking up Pelech and Pulock in the first place. To their credit and to the Islanders and credit in general, I thought they played a pretty spirited game against the Flames. I mean, that might have been one of their better games they've played in a week since that Winnipeg game. They end up coming out on the losing end of it 5-2, but that's a bit of a misleading score because the Flames had two empty net goals. I mean, that was a one-goal game with a minute and a half left, but the Islanders really couldn't put anything together at the end to kind of get that final goal to tie it up. But I mean, their lineup was half guys from the AHL. It was Robin Salo. It was Grant Hutton. It was Richard Panik. It was Andy Andrioff. I mean, there are Flyers fans. If you're a Flyers fan and you turn into that game and you're like, what the hell is Andy Andrioff doing here? I thought he was in Lehigh Valley still. Nope, he was in Bridgeport and now he's an Islander. Like, how did that happen? You mentioned Thomas Hickey has now been called up. Anatoly Goloshev is here. So like, maybe we'll see what he's doing. Sebastian Aho went back into the lineup. So like, these are dudes that would not play for the Islanders outside of the preseason. And what drove me a little bit crazy, I follow Jim Matheson on Twitter. Like, Jim Matheson's an old, very old Edmonton Oilers. He's sort of like I don't know if he's necessarily the Stan Fischler of the Oilers, but he's a little bit like Stan in that he's kind of old school, but he's also, kind of fun to follow sometimes. And he was clearly watching the game and he's like, oh, the Trotz is a great coach, but he can't make, the Islanders need some pop. And I felt like I almost tweeted at him, but then I was like, you know what? I don't need this. I felt like saying, Jim, half of these guys are Bridgeport Islanders. Like, don't look for pop in this lineup. It doesn't exist. There is no pop. There are three guys with pop in this lineup. One of them, Kyle Palmieri, is shooting 2.8% this season. And Zach Parise, the guy on the other side, he's shooting zero because he has no goals. Like, pop? Where's the pop coming from? I don't understand. The only two guys in that lineup on Saturday that had any pop whatsoever, Barzal and Nelson. And that was it, really. And, Nelson scored two goals, and if you've been following the Flames so far this season, that's an enormous accomplishment because the Flames have seven shutouts. They have more shutouts than the Islanders have wins right now. Like, they are just completely buzzsawing teams right now. I don't know if where they're going to be at the end of the season, but I can tell you 100% that they are good this year. because of two reasons. A, Daryl Sutter's a pretty good coach, and B, they finally have fixed their uniforms. They have finally just gone back to they did what the Islanders did. Go back to your original uniforms, guys. There was nothing wrong with them. You never should have changed these uniforms. And now look at where you are. So there you go.
Yeah, we spoke about it like last show. Like the you can kind of see when the Islanders go through a rut, they usually play a game like that one. That kind of is the signal of, hey, like they're starting to find their game a little bit. And that's what I thought about the Flames game. I thought, all right, they're getting better. They put themselves in a spot already where there's no moral victories, but if it kind of felt like one.
Yeah.
A little bit. They did play well. Like I think
when they were down 2-0 halfway through the first period.
Yeah. So. That's another thing too. Like just right. They not only do they are there is so many things going wrong off the ice. I can't remember the last time they've had a lead. But yeah, they played well. I thought, just considering what was going on, I thought like Richard Panik was really good. I thought Robin Salo was really good. There were so many positives to take from that game. If you just looked at it from without taking in a vacuum, without taking in anything else that was going on the outside, that the next day I wasn't confident that they were going to beat the Leafs, but I was feeling that. You know, this team, at least they showed that their process is starting to look good. But that team the next night just looked just so defeated. Basically, right after that Beauvillier play that I mentioned earlier. So the pop isn't like there is. It's the pop that Jim Matheson's looking for isn't coming. like it's not going to come in the way that he thinks it is, and or anyone does. It's going to come just from this team getting a break and everyone's just exhaling. Yeah. And the problem is that they've got to do it against unless these games get postponed, like against the Rangers tomorrow, who are red hot and are on the exact opposite trend of the Rangers have a 0 goal differential on the season and they're 11-3-3 or something like that. I think they are something like 7-1-1 in one goal games or something like that as well. Like this is a team that they just won a game with 0.5 seconds left. Yeah. They are getting incredible goaltending. And they have some superstar players, but they're catching a lot of breaks. The Philadelphia Flyers similarly, like there's a lot of teams in their division where it's like you look around the league and you're just like you said it yesterday to me, like the same teams seem to lose every night. Yeah. And it's the Islanders, the Coyotes, the Kraken,
Canucks, Stars,
Senators, and, Sabres.
Yeah. And Canadians.
And everyone else wins. Right. And I just can't, I'm just looking at all these teams. I'm like, how are these teams winning? Like a win seems, it's such a foreign concept to me right now. It seems so far away that a goal seems that way. I remember like when the Islanders were playing the Flames, it just looked like Jack Parise had 5 golden opportunities against the Flames.
He had 3 shots from the slot on the same shift. One went wide. One, I think, bounced off somebody else. And then I think one went wide in the other direction. You know, like
Grant Hutton missed an empty net from the point. And like there was traffic, but Markstrom was basically down. Yeah. And yes, he's Grant Hutton. So, but that's the other thing too is like the puck will find guys like Grant Hutton when the opportunity's calling. Like Matt Barzal made a really nice play off the rush. It gets the Flames, I believe, in the second period, and his guy running shotgun on the rush was Matt Martin, and he drew Markstrom out, played the puck over to where Martin should have been if he was anybody else besides Matt Martin or Zdeno Chara, and he wasn't there. There was no player there. It would have been a tap in that probably would have hit off the post anyways with the way things are going. But like those are the things that are happening. Well, Oliver Wahlstrom, when's the last time the Islanders scored a 6-on-5 goal with the empty? It's like every time the Islanders pull their goalie down one, the other team scores in about 7 seconds.
And then they get another one.
Yeah, exactly. It's like kind of like the power play. It's like such an unmitigated disaster that the jokes are like, oh, like you'll hear someone say like, oh, they should decline it or whatever. Like it's gotten beyond parody at this point where you just imagine the worst possible situation. And usually that comes true.
Well, that
be it the 3-on-4 goal from Mitch
Marner. Well, I was going to say that leads us right into the Sunday game against the Leafs, and this is what I was going to say too. Like, I forgot my train of thought before, but like, you know, the other problems you could point to that are kind of Islanders made are their special teams, which have been absolutely abysmal this season. Their power play stinks on ice. Like, they can't score a goal. They can't do it. They're standing around. Nobody even gets a good look. I mean, they had a couple, they had 10 power plays against, well, they had 5 power plays against the Flames, right? They had, I think each side had 10. So they got a lot of work and they looked okay, but like, it wasn't like they scored any, or they scored once, right? I think they went 1 for 5 and I think the Flames went 2 for 5 or maybe something like that. But then they make it worse by giving up shorthanded goals, which is something they did not do all of last year until, of course, Game 7 in the Eastern Conference semis. But now they've given up 3 already this season. And the last one was in that game against the Leafs. You know, they have an early power play 3.5 minutes in, and, you know, credit the Leafs for having a really aggressive penalty kill. Like, that's awesome. I love that. I wish the Islanders did more of that, but you know, they can't even get their power play straightened out. And so the Leafs are very aggressive on the penalty kill, and Mitch Marner jumps on a puck. And before you know it, it's 1-0. And it's like, you know, you could see that they had the desire, but they just didn't have the gas, and they did play the night before. So did the Leafs for that matter. And it was pretty close. I mean, it was 1-0 through 2 periods. And you thought, okay, look, if they can get a bounce and tie this game up, then that might be what they need to, you know, kind of grab hold of this thing, take it home, maybe get a point something out of this. But again, that bounce just completely eludes them. And like you said, Beauvillier has a breakaway, puck bounces off his stick, and then 30 seconds later, Andre Kasha makes it 2-0, kind of beating Oliver Wahlstrom to the puck. And like, the, you know, it came out of the corner from Marner. No, it came out of the corner from Sun. I think David Kampf, I don't even know. And Kasha is right there, and the performance 2-0. And then Marner again, he's kind of cutting in front of the net, and he takes a pass from Michael Bunting, and it kind of just slides underneath Ilya Sorokin, who had been fantastic. Dude made 37 saves in that game. And, you know, really that one, I don't think it was a bad goal, but like, it was a backbreaker and it was done. Just, you know, you went from being like, all they need is one bounce to make something out of this. And in the blink of an eye, it was 3-0, and then the game was over. And then Joseph Woll, in his second start, picks up a shutout. He made 21 saves. And if anybody listening to this can remember a single one of them, you're a much better fan than I am, because I can't. He just, you know, good on him. Good, congratulations to the kid. That's great. But like, they're calling out, the brick wall. Dude, 21 saves against a lineup that's half guys from the AHL? What the hell are you talking about? And then people are complaining that we booed John Tavares. We got to boo somebody. We booed our own team by the end of the game. What the hell are you complaining about? Jeez.
It couldn't have, like we were saying, the timing has just been so bad, because, like, talk about a terrible opponent to
seriously
come in and at that exact time. One of the plays, too, that sticks out was, like, talking about, like, getting a break. Like, the 6-on-5 play I was talking about was the Oliver Wahlstrom had a shot on the empty net situation for the Islanders against the Flames that Markstrom made a spectacular save. And I remember thinking then when they were playing the Leafs that was the last time the Islanders have made a goalie make a good save. Because, Joseph Woll didn't have
to. Yeah, Markstrom was legitimately good in that game. Like, that was for real.
Right, yeah. He stole that game, I think, you could say. Or maybe he didn't steal it, but he definitely was the difference. Yeah. And then the next night, like, the Islanders got the goaltending they needed to win that game, but they couldn't generate anything because, we talk about self-inflicted wounds. One of them is, I think we can all talk about the fourth line being terrible to start the season. Yeah. The Islanders finally got some really good sustained pressure in the second period. Crowd got into it.
Yeah, I thought they were actually pretty good in that Leafs game. I don't know if it was playing against Tavares or not that kind of sparked them, but I thought that was one of their better games of the season.
Yeah, I think Cizikas has been fine and is doing his job, and Clutterbuck's been fine. I think Martin is just, you know, he was hurt to start the season and maybe just isn't 100% or something. But it was frustrating because they finally sustained some pressure. They have an offensive zone faceoff after the Leafs had a couple guys out there for maybe 90 seconds, 2-minute shifts. Good. I thought Sheldon Keefe was going to call a timeout. And, you know, of course, everyone on Leafs Twitter would be, oh, great timeout. This guy just is, he's playing 3D checkers. But he didn't. And who comes over the boards, but the fourth line on the offensive zone draw. And they lose the draw. Leafs get a change. They get Islanders get it back deep. Kyle Palmieri takes a very soft offensive zone penalty.
Yeah.
But
I remember that whole scene.
You know, that was another kind of wind out of the sails moment. And I don't know if the decision to that's the line I would have put in that situation, especially because it seems like Trotz is mixing and matching everybody except for Cizikas.
Yeah. He doesn't have much of a choice. But,
I think Cizikas could play up, you know, right. You could double shift him a little bit and you could give Matt Martin a breather. You could play Cizikas with Panic and Clutterbuck here and there. Like he's trying all the sorts of combinations, but for some reason the fourth line hasn't been touched. And I get it's like sacrilege at this point to do it. Like it seems that way. And, but I think, you know, this is a point in the season where you need to do something like that. And, it's in the grand scheme of things, breaking up the fourth line on a hockey team that's 5-8-2 isn't a big deal, but to the Islanders, it would, you know, send some sort of a message, I guess. But, yeah, I think like that was like, but that's been a big part of the problem too, is that those guys, like for them to be able to do their job, everyone else has to be do their job. And so it's not just their issue right now, the fourth line, but because the other three lines aren't going, that means that there's more pressure on them to whether score or do something. And it's just not working for them at all. I've been impressed with Martin in particular since this season. It stinks because they do play a style of hockey where at some point they're all going to, you know, be done and it'll be probably before their contracts are up or whatever. But, you know, you because of the way the team's playing, you do wonder about where Martin is particularly. And so it is like that's the thing. It's just like there are all these kind of little fires everywhere, but there's also a bunch of huge fires too. Like, so it's, you can't, like, if the fourth line was the only issue right now, if we were talking about that, it would be no big deal. Like you can focus on getting those guys up to speed, but right now that's like priority number 17 on a list of maybe 39. Right. So there's just so much to go through. And, but the light at the end of the tunnel is that this team will get healthy at some point. Their luck should change. It's just whether or not it'll be too late. Yeah.
I you know, if we're going to talk about lights, I feel like we're going to talk about the big one in the second half of this podcast, in case you're like, hey, are you guys going to mention UBS Arena? Trust me, Mike is going to give a full report about his trip to UBS Arena in the second half. I think long term, yeah, I mean, the outlook in this team is still good. But, you know, in the short term, you know, you're in a division where basically everybody wins every night. There's, I think, Philly's playing tonight. Carolina, I mean, I feel like they play every night. Like, they're on the West Coast now. Every night they're playing a game. They actually lost last night in overtime. So thank you, Sharks, for taking a point from the Hurricanes. They're the first team to do that in a very long time. You know, like, yeah, like you said, it's tough to look at the standings now. So maybe it's best if we just don't. You know, Nelson will be back. I guess Nelson and Pulick will basically be back more or less around the same time, which would be a huge boon, I'm assuming, sometime around New Year's, and they will get back. And obviously the COVID guys will get back.
And the goal is, I think at this point, to get those guys back and not, you know, let's just say there's three games before they get most of them back.
Yeah.
Four, whatever it is, you got to just basically play, you know, 6 out of 8 or 5 out of 8 points and just keep it reasonable.
Yeah.
And that's possible. And that's all it is. I mean, we keep saying, don't look at the standings, but you think about, team, like I said, the team, like the Devils, the Blue Jackets, our team, the Sabres are ahead of them. Like there are teams that are, it would be very surprising if the Islanders don't climb ahead of these teams. And then, the Penguins are definitely in good form now, but there's 8 points ahead of them with 3 games in hand. So it's both not as bad as it seems, but also
much worse,
worse than it seems at the same time, because like, it's not, the standings aren't as bad as they seem, like, right. If you actually paying attention, understand that what's going on and just how poor the luck's been and the injuries. And, just like you think about who's going to be playing tomorrow and, then it becomes worse. So there's just so many different kind of emotions to deal with here. And it's not going to feel better until this team gets 2 points. Yeah. And God,
right.
I actually feel good if they play tomorrow. Actually, you know, for some reason, and I'll probably feel much different tomorrow when I wake up. But I actually feel like they're going to win tomorrow if they play, which is just
well, there you go.
Really making me upset. I more than anything.
I always feel better about the Islanders playing at the Garden, but we'll see what happens. There always seems to be a place where they like to go in and do stuff. But so I mean, you know, eventually things will turn around and they will come back. And I mean, again, Kyle Palmieri, I doubt, is going to shoot 2.8% for the entire season. And if he does, boy, that's a problem. As far as the Islanders' power play and penalty killing goes, yeah, that's a different story. We're going to take a break right now, and we're going to leave all this stuff behind, and we're going to talk about the really good stuff, which is the opening of see, I just did what Jigs McDonald did. See how easy it is? We're going to talk about the opening of UBS Arena, and Mike will give us a full report from being at the home opener. And I bet everybody else has some cool things to think about from that game too. So give us a minute, and we'll be right back. Thanks. And now a word from our sponsors. First, as always, VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor t-shirt, and our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. You could use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 to save yourself 15% at VintageIceHockey.com. Betway is the official betting partner of the NHL. Play Big Pick for free or play for real. Residents in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Indiana, Iowa only. Check the link in the podcast description to join. You must be 21 or over. Terms and conditions apply. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Delicious Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, and Rosé, all under $15 a bottle. Available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Please drink and play responsibly. So, UBS Arena is now open. We have a home now as Islanders fans. It is a long time coming. I wrote an article at Lighthouse Hockey pouring out my guts and 30 years of frustrations and reading stories in Newsday about how they're going to get a new arena. Now they're not going to get an arena now. And I don't know if people outside what spurred that was a tweet I sent out saying, I don't know if people really understand outside of Islanders sort of bubble, how big a deal that this is, like how long we've been, I know everybody knows about the Barclays Center thing, but like, no, it's beyond that. Like, it goes beyond this. And so for 30 plus years, we've been waiting for this arena, and it is here. It is real. It is spectacular. And you were there. You were there for the opening night. I've seen a lot of pictures, your pictures, other people's pictures. It looks fantastic. I have tickets for Friday's game against the Penguins, whether or not it's played or not. We'll see. It's pretty remarkable, and it's pretty amazing that this is the Islanders' home now. This building that's literally built for them with them in mind and is like dripping with Islander stuff coming right out of the walls.
Yeah. It was surreal going in on Saturday night because I never really took a tour. You didn't take a tour. Like obviously only a select few people did, but I was kind of happy that I didn't because I was very excited to be surprised with everything. And when I went there with my dad on Saturday, we got there at like 5 into the doors around like 5:15, and there was, you know, a long line to get in when the doors open, and the sound was hilarious because it was just people coming into this building and everyone just going, oh my god, all you, instead of hearing, you know, you remember that video from a couple weeks ago after the Knicks won that game, their first game of the season, that video that went viral with the guys like being like bing bong and whatever. My favorite part of that video was like kind of while these guys are all saying outlandish crazy shit, like in the background there's just this like constant screaming and like and that's what it kind of what it sounded like. It sounded like you just heard people like overcome with this emotion, oh my god, screaming like, yes, this place is amazing, look at this. Like it was so funny to hear that as you're walking in, and my dad and I were talking about that. And then we realized we hadn't even gone through the gate yet, like the metal detector yet. And everyone was just so ready, just losing their minds over the, you know, the entranceway. And and then you get in, and it felt like it felt almost like a video game. Like you're going like level by level and discovering new cool things. And I guess, like, what is it, RPG, like Mario RPG or something, like, where you can, like, you can power up in, like, the next level, and every level becomes both more challenging but also more rewarding. You would see one thing and be like, oh, that's amazing. But then you'd look to your right and be like, oh, that thing's pretty cool too. And so it was also really hard to take everything in, obviously, at the same time. The level, the hype of the building, I think, was matched by the level of anticipation and appreciation from Islander fans. But the most important thing to me, and I think to basically everybody who goes to games, who loves this team, was, would the sight lines and the sound be, you're not going to get it to be exactly like the Coliseum, but would it be close? And it was, like, the sight lines, I was sitting in 312, it was row 5 or so, I think. And so I'm in the gods, and closer to the ceiling than to the floor, obviously. And the sight lines are spectacular from at least my seats. And I've talked to a bunch of people and they saw the same thing. And like you said, I think a lot of people on the outside underestimate just what it means to this team and the culture surrounding the team, Long Island in general too, it's both been overstated and understated what's going on by people on the outside, but to Islander fans, people who cover the team, it can't be overstated. Like, what happened this weekend, something I couldn't ever picture in my mind before Saturday and Sunday. And my buddy Kenny came on Sunday, and just like same thing, like he got there, we sat down, he was asking me some questions about it, and then like he's like, I'm gonna take a walk around in the intermission, and did, and just came back, like, this place is wild. And it's true. It's just like a completely different world. It's the, it feels like you're in a New York Islanders theme park. You know? And the concourse is, I will say though, I did see a couple lines for the men's bathroom. Wow. And I also, the concourse will bottleneck at some points because it's I'm not complaining at all, by the way, but nowhere near as bad as it would be at the Coliseum. And I noticed the two places that it bottlenecked were right by the Islanders Hall of Fame, which I think was probably one of the coolest parts of the whole building. And the other place, predictably, Shaq's Big Chicken.
I thought you were going to say Offside Tavern. That would probably be the other place.
No, because you know what they did, which was really great, was they built the bars kind of into the, I don't know how to explain it, like into the walls a little bit. So like Offside Tavern is, it doesn't jut out at all into the concourse. Most of the bars don't. So like it was really smart how they did that. Shaq's is more of like your traditional
concession stand,
like storefront-y kind of place. Gotcha. So the bars are great. Yeah, I was at Offside Tavern for a little bit, and the tailgate bar is really cool. Everyone talked about like the Islander meetup wall, which was really nice touch as well. But like I said, the sight lines were awesome. Sound was great. Especially like the second Nelson goal, it sounded like it did sound like a playoff game in there for a little bit. Didn't last that long, but so yeah, there's and the best part is it's just starting. So this building's gonna be here for a very long time, and there's a lot of things that, you know, I didn't even get near that I'm really excited to get to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about the sound or even the attendance. Like, look, I mean, we know what it's like. I mean, the Islanders went a long, long time playing to nearly empty houses, and the building was very quiet. And then as soon as they started making the playoffs again, people were like, wow, what an atmosphere. This is incredible. Yeah. Well, when they're playing games that matter, the atmosphere is incredible. So I'm not surprised that it would be that way. But yeah, it's just the attention to detail seems to really be remarkable to me. Like, even with the Offside Tavern thing, like, you know, a lot of teams would have been like, you know, they would have sold that, you know, another bar to some corporate sponsor or whatever, but like they went out of their way to talk to Nick, and congratulations to Nick. I don't even think we mentioned it here, which is bad on us, but like to bring him in and give him this spot and, you know, build this spot here and partner with him really on a bar inside the arena. Like, that's unbelievable. And the wall of the fan groups. Like, that's crazy. Who would do that? And even the Islanders Hall of Fame, which is always a thing, but it was always in the bowels of the Coliseum, if you've ever been there. I mean, we all remember that, like, the John Tavares thing where he used to, like, you know, set up his sticks by the Mike Bossy plaque and, like, you know, go through this sort of pregame ritual. Like, now you can see that plaque, and it's cool that there are all these different guys. And I was showing my daughter that in the pregame thing on MSG, and I was like, all these guys are in the Islanders Hall of Fame. She's like, who picks the Islanders Hall of Fame? I'm like, well, it's a long story. I guess the team does, and they haven't in a long time. I mean,
not us, because if it was us,
oh yeah,
that Hall of Fame would have about 30 other guys in
right
there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna get on the phone with Chico Resch right now, and I'm gonna put him in the Islanders Hall of Fame. You know, it's just a cool thing to see. And it was funny too, because, like, you know, Ken Morrow was talking, and, you know, now he's like hairless Ken Morrow, which is a very odd thing to see. And then when they showed his plaque, I'm like, wait, that's the same guy. You see, he's got the hair here. He's got the mustache, that the beard. Like, that's what he looked like in the set. That's Ken Morrow to me, not the clean shaven guy here. I don't know who this guy is. He's kind of weird. He says his name is Ken Morrow, but I'm not sure. But like, it's that kind of stuff that really brings it home. And, like, there are quotes on the walls and pictures, and even Dennis Potvin on the No Sleep Till Belmont today was saying, like, he was impressed because every time they turned around, there would be a wall with a huge picture of one of his old teammates, you know. And it's just like, and it's not just guys from the dynasty. It's other guys that have played throughout the years that weren't on that team. So I think that's really, you know, and the team deserves a lot of credit for that. And it is a shame, like, that, you know, the playing circumstances are such that, you know, the team is not at full strength, obviously. I mean, I'm hoping they get a win in one of these two games coming up, because it would be nice to get one, you know. But, I mean, it really does seem like they spared no expense. It looks great. The lower bowl looks remarkably similar to Nassau Coliseum in the sense that it's pretty straightforward. No bad sight lines, mm-hmm. No bad seats. And then the outside is state of the art, which is kind of a funny juxtaposition when you really think about it.
Yeah, there were some really great things that reminded me of the Coliseum. Like, it was like they brought a lot of the good parts of the Coliseum over. The string quartet that greeted everybody on before Sunday's game in the entrance was definitely not one of them. I don't think that was ever a thing at the Nassau Coliseum. But it was a nice touch. Like, it is funny. It's like, Islander fans are, and I mean this as a compliment, 100%, that Islander fans have, like, a little bit of, like, you know, a rough quality to them, the way we root for the team, right? I think we are, you know, very passionate, and sometimes that passion comes off maybe as a little dirtbaggish, I guess, maybe. I don't know the right word here, but, like, it's just like we're benevolent dirtbags, maybe is the best way to say it, right? Like, we're not going to the game, we're not bringing clients to games, really. We're going to the game because we love the Islanders, and no one's wearing suits. It's very much a fan base that wears the jersey, and so then when you do see a string quartet come in and play, it's almost like like we crash like a gala,
right,
or something at some point. You're like, they built this place for us. It's way too nice. Like, we're going to break it. But they did bring some of the, like, some really great touches over from the Coliseum. I did find a way around parking. We found some parking that is not UBS Arena.
Yeah, we heard that there was some issues getting into the south lot. Apparently was really rough. The Emerald lot, which is bigger, also had a lot of traffic there. They are building a garage, and it won't be done until about March. And I mean, this is the kind of thing that will get straightened out at some point. Again, they're going to build a hotel. Right. They're going to build a lot of stuff. So, I mean, we're just going to have to bear with it, I guess, for the time being.
Exactly. Yeah. There's definitely some, and I appreciate actually that they moved a lot of the games to 7:30, because I think that was basically assuming these issues and that people would not realize it, that you know, parking, getting in and out won't be seamless, and it definitely wasn't. But yeah, like, you know, I found a way around it, which was great. You know, I said on the last podcast that the Islander fans are a fan base that is used to being able to, a lot of them, park across the street at college or high school or whatever for free and walk across, and there's still ways to do that. The other thing that I was laughing about, my friend and I were talking that, there's never going to be another time, I don't think, that the Islanders will be playing a game and simultaneously a boat show a boat expo will be taking place in like the in the basement of this place. You know, like there's been so many times you go to a game at the Coliseum, and you know you walk up to the gate. It's freezing cold in February. You give the guy the ticket that you just paid $2 for, and, or you bought a burrito and the guy gave you a ticket with it. And you're like, all right, I guess I'll go to the game tonight. And you walk in and the Coliseum security guard goes, "Are you here for the boat show or the Islander game?" Well, I guess I'll check out both. I'll go downstairs, maybe see if there's a boat.
They should make the boat show permanent at the Coliseum. If nothing else is going on. Why take them out? Just leave them there. Who the hell cares?
I'm pretty sure when I was in junior year of high school, I went to a college fair in the Coliseum. And that night there was an Islander game. So me and my friends went, got a bunch of brochures. And like our parents were all just like, "Yeah, if you go to that, you can go to the game. We'll pick it up later." So we did. You go look, you talk to a rep from St. John's, and then you go watch the Islanders.
That's pretty funny.
Lose, to the Capitals or something. Mm. Those kind of things are now in the past, and they're gonna become funnier now. To think about, because there's just gonna be such a foreign concept to think about. A boat show going on at the same time at UBS Arena. Cause this is just in a completely different class from what we were used to. And yeah, it did honestly feel like, there was a time, when I was, about 7 or 8 years ago, I was in the city. My dad, was doing work with this charity and, had a couple tickets to like a function, open bar, and gave them to me and my two older brothers. And we went, and after the event ended, my oldest brother Kevin, his now wife, was like, "I really got to go to the bathroom. Can we try to find a bathroom?" And we're in the city, which means it's pretty much impossible. But we were walking by a church, and so I was like, "Let's just see if this is open." We open it up, and this church—I guess it was built like a church, but it ended up being. I opened the doors, and the Victoria's Secret fashion show was going on inside of it. Like it was breaking down. They were breaking down the fashion show.
That's funny.
And luckily we were dressed pretty nice because we were at a charity event. So I was like, they were like, "What do we do?" I was like, "Well, let's just see if there's a bathroom here." So we just literally were walking around this Victoria's Secret fashion show was just wrapping up, and we're walking around, and it felt a little bit like that sometimes. Like you're like, "I don't belong in this place," because it's just way too nice. Everybody in here is like, it's looking around the building like being like, this is. It's like Monaco or something. But no, we do. We do belong in that building. We deserve to be in there, and we deserve what they built for us. Because like, there were times 10 years ago where there'd be 8,000 people watching Joey McDonald and the Islanders take on the Red Wings. So if you told those people, those 8,000 people in the Coliseum, you showed them a picture of UBS Arena and you said, "Look, this is what in 10 years the Islanders are going to be playing in." They'd punch you in the face because they thought, you're trying to yank their chain. So, but it did feel like that a little bit. Like it's going to take some getting used to being a classy joint, but it'll come.
Yeah.
And
the thing that really blew my mind was when the game started and they had this really elaborate sort of like projection show on the ice, which is something that they've done in just about every other arena in the league. If you ever watch like a game from Vegas, they have like, it's like a video game cutscene. Like it's just like, it plays out where like the knight comes out and he like stabs whatever team's mascot is playing or something. Like I think Philly does stuff like this too. Even the Kraken have this kind of thing. And like, at the Coliseum, it was like, you'd have like, four spotlight operators, and these spotlights are like older than you are, and it's like, they're probably, there's the same light bulbs in there that you could buy at Home Depot or something like that. And meanwhile, now the Islanders have the same kind of game ops, value that other teams have, which is kind of remarkable to me. And that was when it really, I think, hit home, like, holy cow, the Islanders have like a real actual modern building now, that can do this kind of stuff. And, maybe not even for them, maybe for like, WWE or concerts and stuff. And the other thing too, really quick before we wrap it up, you talk about the years with the 8,000 fans and stuff. I mean, hopefully we never get back to that point. I think they've sold a lot of season tickets and stuff, but if attendance does at some point, maybe not this season, but in the future, start to dip, the big takeaway from UBS Arena is you cannot move us anymore. do you hear that, Bruce Arthur? You cannot move us anymore. You can count all of the count all the empty seats you want, man. We're not going anywhere. We're not going to Quebec. We're not going to Houston. We're not going to Seattle, obviously. We're not going to Hamilton. We're not going anywhere. This is the team right here. We're not leaving. So you can take all those columns, all those guys wrote all those columns, all those years. This team is move them. Their time is done. Contract them, whatever. Put them someplace where people will appreciate them. You can take all those columns and shove them straight up your ass because you don't need them anymore. This team is here right now. And they don't care if one person shows up to watch a game. They're not going anywhere. So that was the other big takeaway I had from that game. It was like, holy crap, they can't move us anymore. They cannot move us.
Yeah, so. That is an incredibly profound accomplishment. And that is, you know, the problem with this weekend was being able to separate two different feelings, which was, you know, the disappointment and misery of a team that had such high expectations. Like I said earlier, like, I'm no stranger to a season being over in November. I'm no stranger to that at all, but I am a stranger to a season being over in November where the Islanders were considered a Stanley Cup contender. So separating that misery from the complete elation of knowing that the Islanders are going to be here next year, and they're going to be here the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that. And they're going to be a destination too. Like, players will, the Coliseum can't be an excuse anymore for players not to want to play there. So it's just such a gigantic leap forward for this franchise. And it's just, I couldn't help but laugh, honestly, to the first 10 minutes I like spent inside the arena, like just looking at the different things, like just that it's just like the Islanders. I took Katie Baker on a tour of Nassau Coliseum in 2015. It was an Islander Ranger game, and she was doing a story on Grantland. And I just met her at FrancescaCon. She's like talking to me about it. So I told her, I was like, I'll take you and I'll show you the quirks of the Coliseum. I told her a story, which I was tweeting out earlier before I went to the game, was about when my chair just disintegrated under me when Lubomir Vyzovsky scored a game-winning goal. Somehow ended up in
the trunk of your car.
But I was telling her that story, and I also showed her, I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I can't let you go before I take you to the beer garden. She's like, you have a beer garden? That's a Coliseum. I said, sure, you sure do. And I brought her to the quote-unquote Islanders beer garden, which was just outside with those kind of fences around the Coliseum that looked like the things that in the medieval times they'd stick heads on top of.
Yeah, it had a real prison yard feel to them. Yeah,
exactly. And like, there was like a rug of like turf rug that didn't even come close to covering half of the ground in the middle. And then there was like six porta potties and two of Long Island's best cigarette smokers smoking their cigarettes. And I was like, welcome to the beer garden. And she said, get the hell out of here. I said, no, this is the beer garden. And so going from that, and then now you're seeing, these bars, which are, they're really classy looking. Yeah. Like they really are. And,
Wyshynski had a whole thing. He went to all 17 of them, and some you're looking like at them, like, this is inside of a hockey arena. Really? Oh my God. Yeah. There's a speakeasy in there. Like, why?
There was some Mike Kalarka who I met. I met, and also want to shout out a gentleman named Chris who I met. Mike Kalarka, who was one of the winners from our eBay competition last year, and I went to we tailgated before one of the playoff games last season. He was like, hey, I'm at the speakeasy, and he told me exactly where it was. I still couldn't find it. Like, I was like,
speakeasy. You're not supposed to find it.
I kept thinking it was the Dime Club. I was like looking at the and the lady's like, no, this is the Dime Club. And I was like, all right, I don't know. I apologize for not being able to get there, but I seriously couldn't figure out where it was.
You're not supposed to be able to get there. It's a speakeasy. You're supposed to be a bootlegger or a gun runner or something to get in there. But that's pretty. And so, like, you can go back and, you know, see other stuff that you didn't see before. So again, I'm hoping to go soon. It might be Friday. Might be I have tickets also for the Sunday, the 5th game against Chicago. So if anything, I'll get to that one too. But it's pretty remarkable, and it's going to take a little getting used to. But I mean, this is our home now, and I think it's pretty awesome. It's pretty cool. Yeah, the parking probably sucks right now, but it'll get better. Everybody will learn the little quirks and little places they can park where they don't get a ticket. But you know, as I told you and a bunch of our friends too, like, if having this arena means walking 15 minutes to my car, before and after the game, that's a trade-off I'll make. You know, I mean, I think that's pretty fair. I don't know if anybody remembers going to the old, do you ever go to the old Continental Airlines / Brendan Burns / Izod Center?
Yeah, I was at in like 1998. Maybe.
Yeah. Like you used to park across the Jersey Turnpike and walk across this incredibly rickety walkway that was made of like just driftwood and sheet metal and like that corrugated plastic that you put on top of like an outhouse or a shed or something like that. And it's like, am I going to fall into the middle of the New Jersey Turnpike right now? That was how it was. So for a long time, people just, you just parked there and people just walked by the thousands across there to go to that gate, that arena. So this is way better than that. Let's put it that way. Just having to walk around Belmont Park turn. Yeah. So there you go. So that's a cool report. And I'm sure everybody else has some cool stories and stuff to share and, you know, can tell their friends and their family members how awesome it is. And I mean, the consensus seemed to be, it was pretty awesome. I was afraid that something was going to happen, you know, toilets were going to explode and it was going to be a whole big thing, but apparently it didn't. So, so there you go. Cool. So yeah, cool. I'll get to take, if I get a chance to go, I'll make my report, in another episode and we'll see, but I have a feeling I'll just echo a lot of what Mike just said. And we got to get some more people in that Islanders, Hall of Fame now that it is an actual thing. So there you go.
I would love to be a part of the committee. And I don't know.
Yeah, seriously.
It would just be so much fun to,
right.
To, you know how, like when the Baseball Hall of Fame gets voted on, there's always those guys that get like, no, they don't get votes, but it's just like their turn on the ballot. I guess they qualify in some way. Yeah. It would be great to just be like, you know, all right. Like, today we're going to discuss, you know, P.A. Parento's Islander Hall of Fame credentials and knowing he won't get there, right. But I would love to be the guy that does argue on those kind of players' behalf.
I don't think we would we would abuse it. I don't think we would, like, you know, try and get, you know, I don't know, to some Barry Richter or David Harlock onto the team, right? You know, like
no, you'd have to have a big time moment,
yeah.
At the very, very least to get in, and you know, like Sean Bates, for example,
sure.
And you know, with Dublowitz, like sure, like they didn't have the career numbers that you want. Dublowitz, maybe. I mean, his career numbers.
I mean,
just sparkle.
I'm gonna keep saying it till I'm blue in the face. Chico Resch does Devils radio right now. Find a game late in this season where the Devils are at UBS and just put Chico in the damn Islanders Hall of Fame. Like this guy. I mean, his. If you look, go through the Islanders goaltending records. A lot of them are still held by a guy who got traded in 1980. When you think about, you know, like how is that even possible? And it's Chico Resch. He's not just that goofy guy who likes to eat you know, has a mustache and look like Freddie Prinze Jr. I guess very, very briefly in the early 70s. Freddie Prinze. What am I talking about? Not his son, Freddie Prinze, the original. So that would be my guy. Obviously, LaFontaine would be a guy there too, but. You know, there's a lot of guys, and again, now it's a thing. So let's make it a thing. Let's do it.
Yeah,
yeah. But first, the Islanders need to win some games, and starting this week again, we don't know what's going to happen. You know, we'll see if maybe they're postponed or not. You know, if they go, hopefully it's a good time. Hopefully they got in some good practicing, and won't be any more surprises or anything like that. But if Lou Lamoriello has another press conference tomorrow afternoon. My guess is that something very bad has happened. So just keep that in mind. You haven't heard from Barry Trotz, which is kind of the funny thing. Normally Trotz is the guy who does a lot of talking, but these go straight up to the head man. So there you go. Okay. Well, that's it.
I will say, so when I did meet Chris, who listens to us at the game, he said he likes the show. He goes, but you guys stress me out. And I was with Carrie Haber, actually. He said, well, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, he was very appreciative of
that's
it.
Cool.
And you're probably stressed out listening, but I'm stressed out talking and you're stressed out talking. And it's just a stressful.
But for every person that gets stressed out, I feel like there's another person on the other side who gets de-stressed by our stressfulness, I guess. I don't know. But that's why we're a show of the people. You know, we get whatever you want to take it. We're like Pearl Jam lyrics. Whatever you want to hear, that's what you hear, basically. We just give it to you, and then that's it. So you can interpret it as you wish. Yeah. So we'll be back next week and see where everybody's at after that. Everybody have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy, eat a lot of food. Enjoy some football. Enjoy some hockey. enjoy Hawkeye, which is coming to Disney Plus. I can't wait because I'm going to watch it probably multiple times. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Check out VintageIceHockey.com. Check out Betway. I said Indiana before. It was Idaho, I guess. New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Idaho, and Iowa only. But Betway is the official betting partner of the NHL. Try wines from the Pinot Project, thepinotproject.com. And where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lebowski. What do you got on in the hopper this week? The Wonder Goal is still coming out. I mean,
just soccer and hockey stuff, and that's about it.
So check out Mike's work at the Action Network and his podcast work. He pops up all over the place. And yeah, we'll be back next week. We'll see where the season is, what kind of thread it's hanging by next week, and who's even in the lineup. So yeah, a lot of intrigue. And that's it. All right. Thanks a lot. And we will talk to you later. All right. Bye-bye.